This is an international podcast transmission. Is anyone out there? If you're listening, you've reached the No Fixed Agenda podcast.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to No Fixed Agenda. I'm your host, Jeff Stoner. Thank you for taking another journey across the podcast airways with us today as we talk to our friend, Richard Barrett. All right, I can't keep talking like that. Our guest today is Richard Barrett from Cambo Healing. I've known Ricky for about 6 years now, and he's a very dear and close friend to me. And so to have him come in and share his story and have him open up to our listeners was unbelievable. He's talking about psychedelics and the ayahuasca process more than anything else in this show. But he goes through his own journey and opens up about what was going on in his life to get him to this point. His company, Cambo Healing, deals with a lot of the holistic drugs side of things. And I've always kind of wanted to know a little bit more about the ayahuasca process and the ceremony aspect of it. So Ricky coming in and chatting with us about that was kind of eye-opening, not only from the process of ayahuasca, but again, listening to him open up about the struggles he was going through to get him to that point of trying it out himself and having a business in it. So I truly respect him and love him to death for coming in and chatting with us and having this conversation. So I hope you guys enjoy. It's a really, really cool experience. If you've never really known what ayahuasca is, or maybe you do know and don't really know what the process is, he kind of explains it a little bit better for all those listeners. So I know that I got a lot of information out of it. So hope you guys enjoy. Thank you. And welcome to No Fixed Agenda, Richard Barrett.
This is No Fixed Agenda, brought to you by Bubs Natural. Their mission statement is simple: live better, live longer. Bubs helps fuel people to reach their maximum human potential through supplements sourced from nature's highest quality ingredients while giving 10% of all proceeds back to charity. Learn more about their NSF sports certified collagen peptides and electrolyte drink mix at bubsnaturals.com.
They retextured to a new texture. So now he's installing baseboards today.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. It's a never ending deal with our house.
Yeah, it's been years.
Yeah. You know, it's never ending at our place. It sucks. Home ownership, man. That's what. That's,
I just let my shit
keep renting.
Fucking rot. Dude.
I rent here, rot. Own there.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. I rent here and own there.
So, my own where?
In Peru.
Peru.
Yeah, this
house
is
on the Amazon.
Do you not know this story?
No.
This is an interesting story.
We'll get into this story. Yeah, we're going to get into the whole thing. But before we do that.
Yes. So,
yeah.
Richard Barrett.
Yes.
Welcome, buddy. I'm glad you came in today.
You don't look like a Richard Barrett, bro. I mean, I'm stereotyping you like a mug right now, dude.
Slick but Ricky.
Richard, yeah, I like that.
Slick Ricky. Rick.
Yeah. When you say the name Richard Barrett, you think of some like... some clean cut white guy.
Lawyer.
Yeah, lawyer.
And lawyer.
And then you get
like
this.
Mr. Barrett. And then you get Mr. Fucking
Jordan. Jordan holding
no
his clothes.
No socks on.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
T-shirt, yep. Scruff, the whole thing.
I'm a
bro.
Low status one. Low yeah. status Richard.
Low status is right.
Low status.
You do look like a Ricky, but not like a Richard.
Ricky, I brought you in because I want to hear more about the business. You and I have always had conversations about what's been going on, and I've kind of seen you from transition point of buying this thing to where you're at now.
Yeah.
So I figured it would be a good time to talk about psychedelics.
Let's get fucking high.
Prince, yeah.
The question is, did you bring anything with
no.
you?
No, 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 no. God, no.
Damn what? It.
No. Get him out.
You're done.
You're done.
I mean, the show is over. No mushroom gummies, no nothing.
No mushroom gummies, nothing.
Before we get into the whole entire conversation of everything, we want to know what your podcast tender profile pitch is.
What do you mean?
What is your elevator pitch? What would make people want to swipe left or swipe right on this conversation right here?
I mean, it's rare that I'm one of the people that my full-time job is psychedelics.
Oh, yeah.
So it's one of those things where, like, no one has a job like mine that exists. I mean, I made this job for myself. I mean, there's a job where I travel amongst tribes and I teach psychedelics all day long. That's all that I do.
See, that's good, man.
I mean, it's one of those rare jobs that no one else has that kind of job. When you ask people, like when I go on, like I date on online dating and stuff, and I tell people, I teach therapists and psychologists how to properly introduce psychedelics into their practices. It fucking blows their mind. Like, is that an actual job? Like, how did you get that job? How did you make that job? How did that job just come into play?
So you're a legitimate drug dealer.
Yes, but like a holistic one.
but holistic. So
but, I mean, I also
have people feeding on a corner, bro.
yes.
Well, yeah, maybe he does. Yeah,
but they come. So I mean, I guess it'd just be that. I mean, my job is a full time job that is just to only discuss, talk about, and educate about psychedelics.
Yeah. So this is cool. So how did you get into this? Because you come from a way different background.
Yeah.
So tell the listener, like, what that transition was, because you sold your business.
Yeah, I sold my business, yeah.
You kind of like randomly transitioned into this job,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then you've eventually bought the business.
Yeah.
So kind of break that down a little bit.
Yeah, what was the first business?
Well, I was getting divorced in 2018. I ran an IT company for 10 plus years. I did extremely well. Per our divorce, we had to sell it off. You know how you cut everything in half in California? You sell that off. At that time, I think 3 years into that, 3 years after the divorce, I was still kind of selling off parts of clients. I saw contracts that had to be done still. And so at that same time, though, I was still battling divorce really hard. I was really working on my health in like on my head, drinking a lot. Just always extreme for me. It was always extreme. It was either me going 100 miles an hour. I was working out 2 hours a day, loud, obnoxious. Inside, though, I was just falling apart big time. I was getting into shenanigans, dating unhealthy females, just running around until I got to a point where I just hit like a rock bottom there, where I think I was starting to lose friendships, starting to lose out on people calling me, like no one wanted to hang out. I was just like a wild card, and I'm too old to just be that way. It's too hard to be like a wild card and just being that obnoxiously loud, always having to go do something crazy, be loud, just be unpredictable. And so I called the VA for help. I called the VA one day and said, "Yo, I need help, VA. Like, I'm not doing well. Like, I'm starting to really just have dark thoughts. I'm not involved in my own health. I'm not involved in my life. I'm just kind of sinking here with like a bottle of beer, you know, every day, just drinking." And so the VA is like, "Well, you know, come on down. You'll see like a therapist. You'll see a psychologist. Let's just kind of get you dialed in." And so when I go there, of course, they're like, "You know, we're going to put you on Lexapro. We're going to put you on Adderall. We're going to put you on all these meds." And I said, "No, like, I can't do that. For me, I don't want to have that artificial fix of knowing that now I'm dependent on something forever to balance me out. Like, there has to be a better way for me to actually work on my health."
Yeah.
I'm 40, I think 41 at that time. I'm kind of alone. I really don't have any kind of friends like who want to actually hang out with me because I'm just too wild. You know, like, no one wants to hang out with a guy who's just unpredictable.
And I get suckered into it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. To piggyback off the statement, I mean, we met, I think it was back in M-Rock days too, yeah, right? And the same thing. You were wild. Were you like back in that time where you were?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was, yeah.
You were knee deep in it.
I was
right?
knee deep in it. I was knee deep in it. Like, really, I would work out religiously every day, then go home and just fucking drink cases and cases, go out to the bars, meet unsavory females, running around doing bad things, then come home. And that was my fix again, like working out nonstop. But it wasn't solving any of those problems. Like, I needed to work on my mental health big time. And that became a really huge thing where I'm like, okay, well, if I want to get through life, if I want to like rebuild friendships, rebuild my reputation, kind of rebuild who I am, I need to actually start from scratch and like be honest. Because I was just lying to everyone. I mean, I was a huge, I lied religiously about, "Oh, you're cool. I'm great. I'm solid." But I was not.
Yeah.
I was just really down and out lying my ass off.
Yeah.
And so when I went to the VA, I was like, "Hey, like, I don't want to take pills. I want some other kind of help." The psychologist was like, "We're going to put you in therapy then. But have you ever thought about shrooms?
Oh,
have you ever thought about maybe taking shrooms?" I was like, "I don't know how to get shrooms." And like, "I'll have to make some calls, I guess."
I've met a lot of unsavory people in your heyday, bro. I'm sure somebody that you met along at the bar,
I'm
like, bro. Yes,
I'm going back to the bar.
Yeah.
"Johnny, what's up, dude?" "Yeah." "Yes, you do. All right."
Yeah.
So at the same time, though, the VA was also like, "You want to go back to school and get your degree?" I was like, "Oh, that makes sense. That's actually something positive for me to do that could push me in the right direction. I'll go back to school." So I went to school, was working on my bachelor's at that time, as well as like a few other things.
Bachelor's
in plant sciences from UC Irvine.
Okay.
And so that was one of those positive things where that helped me kind of see, okay, if I just keep up this path of like doing what's right, there may be some good end results. I started this path, they put me here, and the VA just kept helping me with all these little cool things that I got. At the same time, one of my old friends, Bryce, hit me up like, "Hey man, we were bullshitting online." Well, Bryce was like, "Hey man, like, I ain't seen you in a few years. What's going on?" He's like, "I have a retreat place down at Tecate, Mexico."
dude, I know where it was at.
And so I was like, Tecate, Mexico?
I've been to this.
And so Bryce was like, hey, man, I have this retreat place. Like, I need some help. Like, are you still open for a new job? I was like, dude, I need a new job bad. Like, I'm selling off my old company. That'll close in like a few weeks. I have no income coming in at all. Like, nothing soon. I said, well, come on down. That's sweet. I might take off about a week or two. I drove down to Tecate, Mexico through Nogales, down to there. And down there, he was just doing all sorts of things with all these psychedelics I've never heard of. Oh, like Oboga, Bufo, bunch of DMT strains, bunch of mescaline strains. And he's just serving people, a bunch of vets, people with drug issues, alcohol issues. And it looked like Wild West. Like, he had all these rooms set up with all these people screaming and crying. And I thought, holy cow, this is crazy. But it worked. Like, they were coming out of it more positive, more happy. So I thought, this has to be where I'm being told to go. I'm going to start doing all this stuff. Like, just... And the problem I had...
Again, all or nothing.
Yeah.
You're like, no, let me sample it first. No, give them all to me.
I think I was so excited about, like, this is, like, the right route. Like, all these people are talking about how they're having problems with their wives, their marriages, their jobs, their this or that, and they're starting to slowly see progress. I thought, well, this is where I want to go. The problem I had was that it was all in or all out. I want to sit there and drink, smoke, eat everything under the sun.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, we need to build up a plan for you. Like, we need to make sure that, like, we give you a plan of what you want to do, what works for you. What meds are you on? Where's your mental mindset at? Are you in therapy? Do you have support system? All these things like, no.
Just give me the drugs, bro. Yeah.
So did you go down here to help out, or did you go down here to?
To help out. But then I ended up seeing that I need that help.
Okay.
So this was
a two-pronged deal for you, right? Okay.
Like, you were looking for a job and help.
Yes. Well, I didn't know what the job was. I know that it got paid. It was down in Tecate, Mexico. I thought it was away from where I currently am.
It was an escape for a second.
It was escape.
So I was in Tecate. I got invited to an ayahuasca event in Tecate, Mexico.
Okay.
And it was, I don't know how many there are, but it was like, It was kind of like on the east side of Tecate, in a ranch, and you literally walked in, and it was just like he's describing exactly right. You walk in, they were all huddled around this big ass tree and a platform. There was a restaurant that was open at some point, and I did not try any psychedelics. I was there.
You missed out, buddy.
Yeah. I did not try any, but there was they called it like a cleansing process.
A spiritual process.
And so you go in and it's like a fucking teepee, dude. And it's all it is just like you're sweating. You're in there for like an hour. I don't know how long I was in there for, bro. But I went in and they dig a ditch. They're freaking burning these rocks, these giant boulders. And it's like a big giant sauna. Yeah.
Couple rocks out.
Like, and so there's like 20 people that are in this giant teepee, dude. And you're just in there and they're meditating. They're doing all this. And I'm just like, okay, I'm freaking out. I'm in it. And then all of a sudden, dude, they start meditating and everybody's like, next thing you know, dude, I'm on the ground, like looking for cooler air, bro. I could not let me out.
Yeah.
And it was a fight, dude. But I will say, I felt so. I did feel lighter. Like, it was kind of cool, but I did not try. And then we came out of that whole environment. It was like, I want to say it was like about an hour and a half. We were in there. You get in for like 45 minutes and then you get out for a little bit. You go back in and then you come out and then they have like food and chill. And there's people that are doing their own little services in this event around this tree. It's pretty cool, dude. But I didn't try any of the psychedelics.
Well, at that time I didn't at all either because I didn't match the criteria that I needed. Like, I had no counseling, no therapy, no support system. All these things, he's like, no, before you start it, like, I need to make sure that you're prepared for what's going to happen to you. Are you mentally secure and safe? Get people that you can turn to? Because, I mean, one thing I love about it is that the mind compartmentalizes trauma. It puts it in the back of the mind and it performs its own triage as if, like, we're cold. It'll cut up parts of your fingers, you know?
Yeah.
For me, at least how my trauma came out was it would come out in terms of me being obnoxious, a drinker, a fighter, a liar, an exaggerator, just wild card. That's how that trauma would, like, present itself out to, like, the world.
Right.
And I really had to deal with, like, that trauma first to acknowledge the fact that I have these issues going on and that I need help with all these things first. So then I go back to Oceanside and then I get a therapist. As I'm talking to Bryce, he's like, well, you know what? I have to go to Peru. I have to go there, go get supplies. Why don't you meet me in Iquitos? Meet me in the Amazon and you'll drink ayahuasca there and we'll have a meeting there to kind of see what you want to do and how you want to live. I thought, I've never been to the Amazon at all. Like, I have no idea how to get there. Where do I go? And that was one of the trials. He's like, well, if you really want to work for me, get used to being in the Amazon. So find your own way there. You have to find the Mamon tribe or the Yawas tribe. You have 2 weeks. So then I had to really start figuring out how to get down to the freaking Amazon. It was just crazy, you know? So I had to do all my research there, figure out how to get down there. And then I spoke no Spanish, and I still don't speak it very good now. I mean, I speak horrible Spanish. But then to communicate and say, hey, you know, like, I'm now in Iquitos. And the Amazon was just unique to me because it was just 105 degrees. It rained nonstop, and it's miserable. It's miserable down there. It's not fun. It's the epitome of third world. Like, if you look in a book and say, I want to see the poorest way to live life, it's right fucking there. It is just poor. But the people are amazing to me. They took me in and just loved me from day one. You know, they loved everything about me. They just loved, you know? Yeah. And so when I finally went down and I found the Yawas tribe, and I found Bryce, you know, down there, and he's doing combo and he's burning himself with these little burn marks on his leg. And he's doing all the stuff he's doing. I thought was weird.
So this is interesting to me. I guess I didn't know this. So he's employing you.
Yeah.
And yet he's gone down to Peru before, and he's obviously he's in the mix of all this stuff. And he looks at you and says, find your own way.
Yeah.
That's interesting to me. Like, I'm just going to hire you, but you know what? Find your own way down to the Amazon and just figure this shit out. I guess it, in a sense, like, it's kind of cool that
it was scary
because you needed to experience that anyway. If you're going to get into this job, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Am I correct in saying though, that in the ayahuasca, I guess I'll call it a trade or practice or whatever ceremonies, that's part of it, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's right. When I was described, when I was at this event, they kind of described you as everything's a journey.
100%.
And so I can see if
so going Bryce
from that mentality of, hey, man, you want to work for me? Great. Your journey starts now. Get to freaking out. Get to the Amazon. You know what I mean?
And it was definitely scary because now I'm going into a place I don't know anything about.
Yeah.
I'm not used to the heat, the rain, the temperature, the environment, the no AC, the no warm water. The food, everything is just beating me up from day one. And then I have to get on a boat, hire someone to take me another 3 hours upstream. And I don't know if it's the right place or not. Like, they could have took me somewhere and said, well, there you go, bye.
There you go, see you later.
And then now I'm screwed.
Eight hours away.
Yeah, exactly. So when I finally found him, I was just such a relief. Like, okay, cool. Because I learned a lot about myself, like, dealing with that fear. That fear I thought was part of my own personal journey too, was if I really want to commit to this new way of life, I got to get over that fear. Yep. Got to just really get on that damn boat, go upstream and figure it out. If I stay here, I'm a coward, I don't care about myself, and I'm going to die. That's how I saw that, kind of like, I need to just go, push me and go.
Like, would the analogy be like, I had to burn my boats back home and say, fuck it, I'm just going to go.
Yeah.
And whatever happens, happens. I'm going to die here anyways. It's almost like, I just saw a reel the other day, somebody sent it to me. It was like, this is fucking gnarly. And it was the hot air balloon that was burning.
Oh, yeah, right? I saw that.
Yeah.
And so
the hot air balloon,
They're burning, right? And you could see people jumping off. Mm-hmm. Fuck that. The choices they had.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Like, it's like, either I fucking stay here and die and burn, or I just die instantly by jumping, right?
Exactly.
And so this is like the analogy to that. Like, I'm already fucking burning, dude.
Exactly.
The building's already fucking, the walls are falling. I got to fucking jump. Yeah. What's the worst thing that's going to happen? I die quick?
Exactly. But then when I got there, it was a huge culture shock because I'm American. I was a corpsman. I was in Navy. So, of course, I have that. I'm American. I'm right. America's the best country in the world.
How long were you in the Navy for?
8 years.
8 years.
Yeah. So then when I get down there, of course, I have the American mentality of I'm right, you're wrong. If it's right in America, it's right everywhere in like the world.
Right.
Yeah. So when I go there and I see all these little kids and I see everyone and they have these little bowls all over the village there, you know, all the village have these little bowls everywhere. And these kids have spoons and they're taking these spoons and they're putting it in the bowl and then they're drinking and they have a little black mouth. So I'm like, well, what the hell are these kids drinking everywhere that we're going? They're just drinking all this stuff. And so I'm sitting there and I'm talking to him and there's me and five other girls who are that night are all going to drink ayahuasca as a group that night. And so I'm asking him, what's in those bowls that these kids keep drinking? And he says, well, that's also what you're going to drink. That's ayahuasca. And it freaked me out. Like, these little kids are drinking ayahuasca. How old are they? 3, 4, 5 years old, literally walking around. Boop, boop,
boop. Fucking ayahuasca.
Yeah, they're doing ayahuasca. Yeah.
Dude.
It freaked me out. I was like, oh my God, this is child abuse. This is fucking child abuse. They're killing kids. They're fucking killing kids. No way, man. I can't do it, dude. I can't do it. You know, so sitting there, I'm like, dude, calm down, Richard. This is like, you're not in America anymore. Like, stop thinking like an American. You're amongst tribes. Start thinking like you're in the tribes now.
You're not in Kansas anymore.
And that really was like, that was like a new check. Like, okay, I'm actually in like a new career path. This is my new way of life. I need to just actually go with that flow. Like, if they're drinking it here, it must work because they're still alive. You know, How long are they going to be alive for?
We don't know.
Yeah, exactly. But then you go and then you see all these kids just doing. I mean, they're such
awesome little kids, like so well put out kids, but their life's horrible. Like, I mean, there's trash and litter and just depravity. There's no running water. There's no electricity. There's generators there. I mean, there's candles for lights. There's no sewage. So it was just, it just kept reality checking. Like, oh my God, is this what I want to do with my life? Like, do I really want to be here? I like a toilet, you know, I like sinks and showers, you know, and there's none of that there at all. Yeah. So it was a hard pill for like that day to really walk around and go, oh my God, like if I take on this career path, this is really going to change everything about me. Like, it's really going to put me in a place where I'm so uncomfortable, you know, like, I don't know if I want to do this or not. And so that night, you know, we sat there and it's me and there's five other females I don't know at all. I don't know any of them at all. There's two teachers. There's a girl who's like a single mom who's getting divorced. And they all have their own traumas.
Are they from there? Or are they from?
No, they're tourists. They're
from the United States.
Yeah, they're from the United States. Yeah. And so that night we all kind of sit and greet each other and hi, I'm Richard and here I am. But you get to see that they're all dealing with their own traumas.
Yeah.
That they're all down there for that. They're there to drink the ayahuasca, to deal with that trauma, to either get it out in the open, to talk about it and like be okay with it, or to really find some kind of resolution to figure out what to do next in life. And so it let me believe that I'm actually in the right spot. That like, okay, like they're here dealing with their own trauma. Like there's a teacher who, bless her heart, she hates kids. And she's like, I got 3-4 years left to get my full retirement. I just can't stand kids anymore. And I'm here to drink, to deal with that trauma of kids. I've been hit as a teacher. I've been hit. I've been kicked. I've been punched. All that there. She's there to deal with that. There's a girl getting divorced. Who's like, hey, you know what? Me and my husband, we've been together for 25 years. I'm unhappy in marriage. I'm here today to see if I'm supposed to get divorced or not. So as we're kind of sharing all of our trauma, for me, like they come to me and I'm like, guys, I'm just fucked up. Like literally, I have everything wrong with me in the world. I was like, I don't have a single friend I can count on. I burned every bridge that I could possibly burn. I'm an alcoholic right now. I hate myself. And it's just like this one humbling laundry list of like, when I say it out loud, I was like, fuck, I'm just a bad person. Like I'm a really not good fucking person. And saying it that way and really owning up to it was part of that process.
When you said that, you said it out loud to, I guess it would be a group of your peers.
Yeah.
What was the thought in your head?
It made me cry. Yeah. It's like really owning up to the fact that you're not the person that you want to be or that you thought that you could be. And just when you realize that you're a huge disappointment to yourself.
Yeah.
Also makes it just even more like, ugh, like it just made me just embarrassed to say those words. And it made me put my head down in shame because I didn't want to see them see me stare at them and me see that shame.
Yeah.
I have a similar thing happened to me when I was in rehab, right? When I came to the realization that, you know, all my whole life I hated my parents. My parents were fucking shits because I was raised.
Yeah.
But then I turned around and I looked at myself in the mirror and had to do the same thing that you just did, right? And you come to the realization, I'm in rehab. And I hated my parents because they were addicts.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, man. And I came to the realization, like, I'm no better than my parents.
Yeah.
And it was like the self-reflection of it. But when I did that, it was almost like a burden that I was carrying so freaking hard. Like the persona that I was trying to portray to my family, to my children.
That weight.
It's a fucking weight.
Yes, it is.
Man.
It is.
It is so heavy, man.
But then that pride and the ego, all that plays a part in being like a man and not being able to be vulnerable to say, I'm fucking losing it. I'm fucking going down south. I need help. And that was the hardest part for me. But that's what I love about what ayahuasca. Like that night when I drank it that night, I had never felt such relief to just be able to be ashamed of myself. Just be like, fuck, Richard, like you're going through, man. But I was so happy I was there because it took all that trauma that's in the back of my mind that stores it there, you know, that just keeps it back there. And it brings it right to the front of your face where you're forced to deal with all of it, where you can no longer hide it. You can't push it aside. You can't say, no, 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 I don't want to deal with it. It's right there in your mind. And it's a slow burn. You know, you have that whole time displacement where for you, it's only 8 hours, but in your mind with your eyes closed, it's 3, 4, 5, 10 days, you know, of you just in your mind, talking out that stuff and really dealing with the issues and being okay with it and accepting it and being able to move on with it and say, you know what? I know it's there, but it no longer controls me. It no longer affects me and I forgive myself and I'm going to move on. And that's one thing I love what ayahuasca did for me. And I was like, I'm hooked. I did it, I think every other day for like a week. And it was times where it'd be a great conversation to myself. I would talk to my mom who's now dead. I would forgive her for what she did to me. I'd talk to my dad who's passed away and I'd be able to forgive him. We'd have these intimate talks where I get to express all this hate, disappointment, sadness that made me this bad person that was controlling me for so long. I could finally just let it go.
So would you say you were a bad person or you were just a lost person?
Yeah, I was going to say.
I'd say,
I felt like you were like, I felt like you probably were more lost than you were. I don't ever think you were a bad person.
I don't either.
I think you were just lost in what you were trying to figure out in life.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of lost. I mean,
and honestly, Ricky, from all of your friends, I don't think anybody felt that you were a bad person. I think people could see that you were probably lost in some of the ways
in
the decisions you were making.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
But nobody ever really thought that you were a bad person.
Okay, well,
I agree with
right?
that.
Yeah. I feel that Des and I would always have some conversations about, hey, we're a little bit worried. You know, he made this decision, he did this. And so I don't think you were ever a bad person. It was probably one of those things where you were honestly just lost. And it stems from, you know, the divorce and everything, right? Like, and trying to figure that shit out some of the issues growing up and everything else.
Well, I mean, it taught me a lot that the mind, I mean, now that it's a career path now and I studied all day, I mean, I've learned a lot about the mind and how the mind just compartmentalizes trauma and how it takes it out on itself. And if you don't deal with that trauma, it builds it up, it builds it up. And when it does unleash, it unleashes it in the most self-destructive ways. And that's what I really look back at those years when I say, okay, like I had my divorce and then dealing with the separation, but also me not really owning up to how bad it was, me not wanting to, my pride and my ego got in the way of me really dealing with that, with those problems. And I got to see how that hubris really just slowly start eating at me, eating at me, eating at me. And then I would take it out on myself through just a bunch of, just a kaleidoscope of just shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
I have a question for you when it comes to like this, so much to unpack right down there, like everything you just shared. And I'm learning a different side of you, Ricky, that I did not ever think I was ever going to know about you. That's the truth. Yeah. And so it's like, I've always said this and I coach this to a lot of people that are going like through some stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, people are not bad. I've said this a million times. I think I'm even on this podcast. I don't think people wake up to be bad. I think they're just going through life with whatever scars and tissues and burdens and perceptions that they have through their life experiences. They don't wake up today. Like, I don't think you woke up to, you know, let me go fuck some shit up, right?
Oh, yeah.
You were just trying to cope with the pain and the drama that you
also
had.
I don't think you actually, when you're in that mindset, I don't think you actually even see what you're doing or like you even realize what you're doing. You kind of are just on this self-destructive autopilot.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
And I think that's where I was on for so long, for about three good years of just on this autopilot of just, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, but I'm out there.
Yeah.
And if things went south, it went south.
And so you had a pattern disruption and you had to put yourself in a scenario where you were being pressed. Right, you freaking traveling to Iowa to the Amazons and not knowing anybody, not knowing anything, and you being scared shitless created an environment where you were pressed. Mm-hmm. Like you had no other choice. You knew nobody, nothing. It's like you had nobody to behave and to cope. All of your coping mechanisms were stripped away from you, and all you were doing was facing yourself. Oh, yeah. And you went into the ayahuasca, you're like, fuck, I'm really facing myself. You had the hugest pattern disruption that I had when I was in rehab, right? When they stripped everything away from me and I couldn't call my family for freaking 60 days.
Yeah.
I couldn't manipulate anybody to giving me money. I couldn't manipulate anybody to giving me sex, drugs, or anything like that. There was nothing left. All that was left was looking straight at myself.
Yeah.
And it fucking sucked.
Oh, 100%.
It fucking sucked. It was probably one of the hardest things. And then it made me go into the relationships that I had with my ex-wife and my mom and my dad and all this other stuff. But I think that in doing so, hardships create beautiful things. And I think
I'm a beautiful man.
You are a beautiful man now, baby. Just don't rock around in Daisy Dukes, okay?
Yeah. So I have a lot of questions about ayahuasca because that's kind of a topic that you kind of see from the celebrity side of things now that people are doing. But I before I get into some of that, let's fast forward a little bit with first time down in Peru, you experienced all of that.
Yeah.
Right. I want to get into what was the decision of Bryce selling the company to you? Like, how did that work out? And then what was from that transition you've experienced once or twice at that point before
I did it for, I think that was probably the first year to that, maybe like 3 to 4 times at that time. Bryce at that time was living in Oaxaca and he wanted to open up. He wanted to solely, Bryce was just an amazing man because he had a girlfriend in every country he would go to. He had like a little family there, little girlfriend, little child, girlfriend, child, you know, all over the place.
Wow.
But he really loved Oaxaca a lot. Yeah. He loved Oaxaca a lot. He loved Tulum a lot, loved being down there a lot. And he had an e-commerce aspect where he would sell a bunch of like indigenous products on site. And I just had came from like the IT world where I thought, you know, like he wants to set up and he only wants to focus on just on retreats and trainings. And I thought, well, I'll take on the e-commerce part. Like, let me have that. I could probably work with that and kind of build up a small income from there.
Yeah. And you have that base. And so I kind of know where to start
direction. From that. So we agreed and we wrote out a contract and said that I'll go ahead and I'll take over this and I'll pay you with profit till I pay off what I need to do that. And that went well. I mean, I was going down to South America. At the time, I was really building relationships with the individual tribes, like the Mamon tribe, the Yawis, the Huni-Kuni, the Masas tribes. And then I really started to build up other friendships as well with the boat drivers there. Because to get anywhere on like the Amazon, you need a boat.
Yeah.
You need boats. And depending on the height of the Amazon, it'll drop 30 feet, 15 feet. It'll rise up again 40. It rises up and goes down like crazy there. So I needed a boat. So at that time, I decided to go ahead and get a small loan. And I went and bought a boat there. And then I met some boat drivers there. And I really just started making connections with people so I could just source products when I'm there.
Right.
And then I had to learn about customs here and getting stuff back across the state lines here. Yeah. And then from there, to really kind of get around that, I had to open up a nonprofit church. Now I function
I didn't know that. Okay. So that's part of the Peru thing.
Yeah. That's part of the thing. Yeah. 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 Okay. So then that helps me to, cause I mean, I'll come back.
The nonprofits in Peru.
The nonprofits here.
United States.
Yeah. The nonprofits here because I bring back so much from the tribes that I was getting taxed a lot when I'd come back through customs.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And since I'm buying it from the tribes, it goes straight to them. I decided I would just turn it into a nonprofit.
Good call.
And then that kind of helped me as well, bring down taxes and kind of do all those little things that I did.
It is a spiritual thing though.
Oh, so yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So I mean, I would source and I would come back with a suitcase full. I mean, I would go down there in two pair of jorts and a shirt and my suitcase would weigh probably 10 pounds. Then I would come back and now it weighs 55 pounds.
Yeah.
So I would get heat from customs probably my first year. I would just get, cause they would want to go through everything and look and see what's in the bag.
So what is that process? And you and I have talked about this and I still have a hard time understanding it. So you talk about bringing product back home from Peru.
Yeah.
Like going through customs.
What was the product?
A bunch of ceremonial products, like what the tribes make from non-based. So they have, tribes there. A lot of the tribal stuff there is going to be, it's going to be DMT based or like a mescaline based. You're going to have like San Pedro, peyote, ayahuasca.
So there were consumable items.
So consumables and then non-consumables as well from their dress gear, their headwear, all that stuff there. That's also there too. So I don't bring any of like the actual psychedelics back. I have that shipped instead from Brazil to Mexico, Mexico to here.
Got it.
And then so the non-psychedelics, then I have just in the case there and it's all brought back.
And that's due to the customs aspect right? You can't bring psychedelics through customs.
You can a small bit, yeah. Like I can bring it back, but what I needed as I started to grow, because that's something that, so I mean, you can bring back a small extent of what I would bring back.
Okay.
But not to the point now where what I need now exceeds what I'm allowed to actually bring.
Got it.
Because there's thresholds on distribution versus
because a certain weight gets into distribution.
So that I'm assuming you were
the drug charge. Yeah,
I'm assuming you were getting sweated on the consumable.
Yes,
very much so, not on the other.
No,
right?
No,
because if there's a consumption
because a lot of like DMT is also in a powder form as well. So I would bring back stuff that was in that form. So then they would get a knife out, or they'd bring out a dog, and they would look at it and sniff it, but it wasn't a DMT base. So then what customs would do is they'd be assholes. They'd cut holes in stuff and they wouldn't retape it up. And then so then it caused a whole problem there. So at first they were just jerks. But now it's more of an easier process. Now they know me. They can see it on my passport now that I'm there constantly. They have me in the computer system now. So the very first years that I was doing this, I was stopped constantly. They would get me off the plane. It stopped me like right then before I got off and they would just pull me out.
Yeah. And so because the custom process is so in depth, right? When you talk about non-consumable items, like if I'm bringing 10 pairs of shorts over and just jorts. Let's say they were made in the Amazon. That's just a textile. It's not a big deal, dude.
Yeah.
Like, but once there's anything that can be consumed, AKA fruit, meats, vegetables.
Yeah. It becomes an issue.
Then now you're talking distribution.
Surprisingly, the one thing that's always a real hard time to bring back is tobacco, moy, Brazilian moy. So there's tobacco here in the States that
super you have. Regulated.
Then you have tobacco moy, which is a Brazilian tobacco, which is amazing, which is used in a lot of ceremonies as well. They give me the hardest time with that. Even if it's five or six of them, they give me the hardest time where they always want to tax tobacco.
Yeah, because tobacco is very regulated.
Yeah.
because you're a cigarette here is a buck to make, but we're selling it for $2, right? You know, and it's so that's the way. If you're bringing tobacco, well, you're bringing, especially in a large quantity, you're probably using it to distribute. Then now you're Philip Moore, you're.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I do Sharma sell those Boros. Online. I do sell that online too, yeah.
Yeah, so he would fall under all those tax regulations. Yeah. And that's all custom does, dude.
Oh, yeah.
They just look at all the tax codes here in the state, wherever you're going to import in from. It's not the shipping company or the exporting company. It's the company or the country that you're bringing into or the city ordinance. That particular product falls into the whole process, and that's why they were sweating them so much.
Yeah. So you've gone through all of that stuff. You've now... You go down because now you go down there twice a year.
I go there four times a year now.
Four times a year.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Man. I'll go again September 5th and then I'll go again probably Christmas time.
So how much are you shipping in from there?
Usually it just depends. I mean, as I've grown over the years, the more I sell, the more that I need to go down there. You know, I mean, since I do trainings here, teachings here, I operate as a one man show.
Yeah.
So my days are slammed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I pretty much will spend my days with Peru and Brazil on like phone, trying to talk to them via text. Hey, I need this done, and that done as well. Well, one thing I am doing is I'm starting up a tour-based company down there as well. So that's one of the goals that I started this year was to take people on more, I think the tours that folks actually want to do.
Like a spiritual tour type of thing?
Or just to go see the Amazon? The boats down there are really decrepit. The areas aren't really nice.
Got it.
And so since I've gone there so much, I'm like, well, if I was coming down here, I'd want to see these things.
Got it.
So I'm working with my employees down there now to start up a new tour company then. So I have that plan too.
So let's talk about ayahuasca just for a little bit.
It's one of my favorites.
So we had Caesar in here and he now does a lot of the breath work and he talked about doing ayahuasca and stuff as well. So we've had slight conversations about this. So I know it's kind of a trendy thing, like I had mentioned before, and you hear celebrities talk about this sometimes. Anybody who is unfamiliar with ayahuasca, they've heard the term.
Yeah.
They hear what it is, but they don't really understand what it is. Mm-hmm. What break that down just a little bit and what it is mm-hmm. as a product mm-hmm. and then what people experience when they go through it. Because you, as you said, you do this as well. You put on the actual ayahuasca journey itself or a ceremony.
So
or whatever.
Ayahuasca is simply a form of DMT. There's probably three forms of DMT that exist in plants and in toads. So toads.
What is a DMT?
Dimethyltryptamine.
Oh.
Ayahuasca contains what's called 5-methoxydimethyltryptamine. It's what allows it to pass what's called the BBB, the blood-brain barrier in your mind. The human mind also in the pineal gland produces light amounts of DMT during like pain. You ever break your arm, you get hurt really bad. The pineal gland will then produce also DMT as well.
Oh. Or to reduce the pain.
To reduce the pain, to put you in a trance. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But DMT in terms of ayahuasca comes from two things. You have what's called the capi plant, which is a root that grows upward from a tree branch down into the ground. That capi contains what's called MAOI. The MAOI stops the body's metabolization of the actual chacoonery plant, which is the DMT in the body.
Okay.
So your body tries to actually metabolize it as quickly as it can. It won't allow it to absorb into your gut. When DMT gets into your gut is when it produces the actual psychedelic explosion that you have, that slow burning process. During ceremony, typically like your friend does, he does like the breath work and stuff. The goal is to go into it with the right frame of mind. You know, I believe hugely that the way in which you drink is going to affect how that ceremony goes. That's not always the case.
All right.
With ayahuasca, typically it's going to show you what it wants to show you. The slower burn there. Like for me, my last experience that I had, I was really excited. I really wanted to have a really fun time. I wanted to giggle and laugh and kind of rejoice and be thankful for this life that I've built now. That was my whole intention of like, I feel like I've succeeded in life now. I've kind of worked on a lot of issues I've had. This company's going great. And I really wanted to have an experience that was just more of a thankful, more grateful, more gratuitous ceremony there. And that's how I drink that. So when I get that cup, typically you'll get a cup and it'll be maybe about 2 ounces.
Okay.
Because you'll mix the capi, the chacoonery, and a whole ceremony there. You cook it, stir it, and then from there you drink it. Typically, a half hour after that, if you're not feeling any effects of it, you'll drink one more cup. So part of the process is that purging process. Since that moi actually affects your body, it's the MOA, it's the CAPI that gives you those knots that makes you want to throw up. So when you typically, when you start to throw up, that's when the ceremony actually starts. That's when the ayahuasca usually kicks in, because now it's absorbed into your gut, and now your gut's trying to release that moi from your body, so it wants to expel it from your body.
So it's trying to expel it either through urine or vomit.
No, through vomit.
Through vomit.
You are going to puke. It's part of that process. It's part of a spiritual purging as well. They're going to purge your body as well as purge your soul and mind.
Got it.
So when people go into this, like you said, you were going in more of a fun, like excited, yeah, like mentality. Like,
yeah,
when people go out and do this, typically what kind of mental state would you want them to be in?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, why do you want to do it? I mean, that's always okay. The questions I ask is, what is your intention here? So the way that I teach is called PSI, preparation, session, integration. So I teach it off a PSI modality of how are you prepared? And part of that preparation is, why do you want to do this?
Right.
What are you hoping to actually get out of this? Do you have all that thing in place? Like, are you trying to conquer a trauma? Are you in therapy now to talk about these things that you want to approach while you're there?
Right. So it's one of those things where you don't really want people to do it just to do it.
No, because I mean, the mind is fragile. And so since this process will, I mean, if you're not prepared for even on a smaller scale, they're prepared to deal with yourself.
Okay.
You may not like what you see there. I mean, we're our own worst enemies.
Yes.
When it comes to how we judge ourselves, Sarah,
yeah,
when you kind of take away those blockades we have in place that protect us, that's what ayahuasca does, is it removes those barriers that we put in place to keep us safe from ourselves, how we trudge along, we go on.
I love you say that.
Yeah.
I love that you say that.
So then when that's now gone now and that barrier's removed now, all that stuff, all those thoughts that we kind of suppress, we push to the back of mind, are now front facing now. It's almost like how you talked about earlier, staring yourself right in the mirror there and everything's there.
Yeah, all the ugliness.
All the ugliness, right, there. Everything you may not want to talk about yourself, everything you may hide from yourself, all the lies you may hide from yourself, all the disappointments that you may hide from yourself, all the shenanigans that you've done that you're trying to just move away from and say, I don't want to deal with that. Those are going to come, that whole barrier is now down now. That means it's all there now for you to actually face. Yep. And you may not like any of what you see. And if you're not prepared for it, it could really open up those doorways that you're just going to forever not be able to like escape from it. It's there.
Yeah. And so you talk about these barriers. They're not just coping mechanism. They're defense mechanism,
yes,
for the brain.
Oh, yeah. The mind protects itself from itself. So it's like triage. It's like if you're getting frostbitten on like your hands, you'll cut off your fingertips first, your toe tips first. Mm. That's what the mind does. It protects itself from itself. So it's going to push all this stuff out of the way there.
Because it's constant calculating. We talked this in just nutritional behavior, right? It's constantly calculating what it thinks it needs all the time and is trying to protect you from any due stress. So when we talk about this kind of things of pattern disruption, stuff like that, you're literally going, your brain goes, okay, this is what's safe. It's equated to when we went up to the hot, tallest building, the observatory.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
And we're sitting there, we're going through it, and I'm like, this is not safe. And what was happening in my brain, I felt my brain just kind of firing.
Yeah.
And I'm like leaning back and I'm like, this is scary. And all it was is like they tilt you over the edge of a tall building.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
All right. And so all of that, your brain is kind of going. And so if I would have just laid there for a little bit longer, I probably would have just curled up and my brain would have been like, okay, now this is safe now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And so the same thing happens when you have any kind of trauma or any kind of embarrassing or whatever, your brain goes like, hey dude, this is not safe. Let's put this away for a little while.
Yeah.
That's fucking scary, dude. When you're talking about breaking down those barriers, that's like opening the cage to a bunch of fucking lions, dude.
Yeah. And then the problem with that though, is that once that page is now open. Now you can't close it again. Those thoughts are there forever now.
That's how ayahuasca works.
Yeah, that's how it says. Yeah, you can never hide. They're like the mindful for never be able to lock that away again.
Wow.
So you really have to be prepared to go into that journey to expect those things.
So that's interesting because I not really knowing exactly, you know, the mental aspect of it. I didn't really know if it was something where you see those visions and you just kind of forget about it after the fact. But this is something that you pretty much.
Burning the cage down,
yeah,
bro.
You burn it down. Like you said, you've the toothpaste is out of the tube. And now you know exactly.
You can't get it back in.
Yeah. Right. No, wow. For example, my mom died when I was doing my degree. My mom died at the hospital of drug use. She died in 2022. you know, died. And I didn't ever get to say goodbye to her. She was at the hospital. It was during COVID. I couldn't say anything to her at all. She passed away there. When I did ayahuasca, that was not part of my plan at all, was to like, it was to actually see her, talk to her, have that conversation with her. But that whole 8 hours for me felt like 25 years of my life was just me and her that whole day. You know, everything was just us that day.
That was
Every single thing. And I talked to her as if she was sitting right in front of me, as if you're right there. And we hashed out our entire life. It's one thing is that where I can still replay every moment of that conversation in my head. Wow. And it brings me so much fucking joy.
How you know? Real was that?
Oh, it was so, that thing is it's so real. And when I got out of that day, I cried for probably about a good half a day where I laid in bed that day. And I had juice that day. And I was so mentally taxed because my mind was going so much over this. Like I was talking to my mom and we're reliving our entire abusive relationship. And she's asking for forgiveness. And she's telling me that she's sorry. And we're replaying all the happy moments, the sad moments. All these moments that we're replaying, when I got out of it, I never felt so much fucking relief. And now I love my mom so much now.
Wow.
Because we have that moment of just pure love. And like all that hate that I had for all the animosity that controlled all my actions with her is gone. Wow. And it feels like such a relief to me to be able to like, oh, I love my mom. Like how rad is that?
You know, was there a correlation between that relationship that you uncovered? Like, you literally took the box that or the cage that was in and you burned it down. And now you have this beautiful moment with your mom. Was there some kind of realization to like maybe some of the unsavory relationships that you were having with women, with some of the 100%.
I mean, like I said, all that affects everything else. I just didn't ever, I mean, since I never took my mental health for real, I never paid respect to it. I could look back and see now how those traumas caused me problems here down the road now. I mean, it's just like a domino effect.
Yeah.
You know, that they're slowly knocking one down that has to put a stop to it. You have to say, you know, no more. Stop that domino so I can't hit the next one.
Okay.
And I look back now and go, God damn it, Richard. Like, I really wish I had more self-respect, more love for myself back then to take those drastic steps.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, it was a huge step for me to like do, but I had to really lose almost everything that I had to really find that.
It's like called bottom.
Yeah. Bottom. Yeah.
So when you're going through the ceremony aspect of it, talk about that a little bit because there's definitely some rules, I guess, from who should be in there with you.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on like for me, I won't serve a female alone. Like when I do ceremony here, I'll make sure I have another female help me to do that there.
Right.
Why is that?
Well, because most of the time you're going to puke on yourself. You may choose to get nude.
To the bathroom. Yeah.
You may have to go to the bathroom. And when I first said I want to make this a career path, when I finally got to realize how much this was affecting me, how much it was really like doing work on me, I was really like, this is something that I come back here to the States and none of this exists there. Like no one has that. I'm going to the VA back to my therapist saying, you know what? You were wrong. Like, fuck you. You know, you're wrong, dude. Like, I'm not going to take those pills. This worked. Like, this is the right path. I put up a job board saying on the job board on the VA, like, if you want to do ayahuasca, shrooms, call me up. I got filled up.
I
got filled up quick.
That was going to be my question about this.
I got filled up quick, dude. And I start hitting up. Like, hey, are you the guy that serves mushrooms? Come on down, dude. Like, let's do it, man. So I start learning. I start really teaching. I was like, okay, like, this is uncomfortable. That's uncomfortable. Because, I mean, I would serve girls and then they would immediately get nude. And I'm like, oh, goddamn, Richard, like, this is not looking good for you, buddy. Like, you need to do something about that.
That's dangerous.
Well, dangerous, yeah. Because, I mean, well, they're also dealing with assault, sexual assault.
Yes.
So a lot of times they're, like, reclaiming back their bodies. They're reclaiming back their individuality. And then here they are getting nude at my house. I'm like, oh, God, Richard, this is just nobody. You need help, dude. You need help. So I started creating my own rules for, like, who I'll serve, what I'll serve, and all that there. But traditionally in the Amazon, you have a dieta that you would do, which is, like, a diet. There's a fruit-based diet only, fruit and juice for the days that lead up to that. One, it'll make sure that you don't puke up a ton of like hard foods in your body.
Yeah.
But also shrooms, it absorbs all of that ayahuasca, that it's not competing with anything else in your body. So fruits, juices, papaya, pineapple, stuff like that is
easier digestive foods.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So no like red meats, no fishes, anything like that. So usually that's about, I'd say, a day and a half into that ceremony so that when you drink it, you should feel that within 30 minutes. And then it's, like I said, it's a slow burn because you're going to slowly start to feel the ayahuasca. Like for me, I'll feel it in my gut because I can feel it turning. I can feel it turning inside of me. I can feel like my whole body getting like a knot. And then from there, usually for me, I get that warm feeling like that warm over, like almost have like a warm blanket on me. Like I feel really warm and serene. when I get that knot and that kind of warm feeling in me, I usually try to keep my eyes closed because I really want to make sure that I'm internalized and then I'm not staring around. Because either you're by yourself or you're with maybe four or five other people in that space. So like the last time that I did it, it was me and it was two other people who were across. So I kept my eyes closed the entire time. And then my ayahuasca master will sing and he'll blow my pacho on you and he'll blow some smoke on top of your head. Also blow some smoke to kind of just get all the spirits off you. And then usually for me, by that time, that smoke makes you just throw up too. I can't stand that smoke. I don't know why he chooses to do it. I fucking can't stand it, but I'll throw up. I'll turn around, bleh, I'll throw up. And then from there, for me, depending on the person, DMT, you're either going to be the guy that sees fantastic colors. You're going to open up your eyes and you're going to see reds, blues, geometry, sacred geometry. You're going to see a lot of things there. For me, I don't have any of that. For me, I feel everything. When I close my eyes, that's all I see. But if I open up my eyes there, I don't see anything. So for me, closing my eyes and just being in that is just, and I can feel everything from sound, vibration, from when he sings and he goes up and down when he sings, like his voice, I can feel that vibration on my skin, just like caressing me and touching me.
Wow.
I can feel all of that there. When he walks and when he blows smoke, I can feel the smoke and I can feel it just really calmly down my arm, down my hair, down my legs, and like pushing just everything bad off of me, slowly onto the ground. And so everyone has their own unique experience there. Like I said, the last time I really wanted to have a positive one and it was horrendously bad. It sucked. I was so mad that it was bad.
So the intention was to have
awesome time and giggle and laugh.
Why did it make it bad?
Because like I said, I mean, it showed me what I needed to see. More work. More work. There's more
work to
do.
You're not done yet.
More work, Richard. Of course.
That's crazy.
You know, so I wanted to have it because the time before that, it was like sex. It was orgasmic. Like, I mean, I was just in love with myself and love with life and I was hugging myself and crying. And I just felt like such a fucking reward of like, you won, Richard, you won. Like you're finally doing life right. Oh, what a fucking victory you have, you know? And that's what I wanted. I wanted to have that feeling again, you know, of just winning, you know, nothing feels just to win feels great.
Yeah.
And this time I was like, no, man, like we have to have a talk, buddy. This is what I see you doing. You have this. This is still an issue for you. You need to conquer this. You need to go tell that person that you forgive them. You need to seek out forgiveness from that person. Like, you have a laundry list of things that you need to still do, buddy.
You got work to do, bro.
Yeah. And so it was like, God,
you ain't done yet.
Yeah. And so I remember just getting out of that, crying for hours. And what was strange, that was one of the first times that once again was so hard because I was with random strangers again and I was vocalizing, almost like narrating to myself what was happening internally. So these people next to me got to hear all of my trauma and everything I was saying to myself, you know, but I couldn't stop talking. Like it wouldn't let me stop talking. So I was saying, Richard, you're not doing this right. I know I'm not doing that. And I'm outlining all these conversations that I'm having to myself, but I can't stop saying them out loud. And so when I got done, of course I felt really embarrassed. And now these two random strangers now heard all this trauma,
all your dirty laundry,
all my dirty laundry, you know, but I couldn't stop it. And I was mad, like, shut the fuck up, Richard, shut up. But I couldn't stop talking.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So, but as you're purging through these thoughts, man, I got so many questions about how long does usually one ayahuasca session last?
So for me, usually like we start it at 8 o'clock at night. We'll usually start in ceremony first. You always do ayahuasca at night. Always at night.
Okay. Yeah. And then it lasts for
and then it lasts usually if I drink it at, let's say 8 o'clock, I should be purging by 8:45, 9 o'clock.
Purging meaning vomiting.
Oh, throwing up. Yes.
Yes.
Depending on the strength or what adulterants are in it, if it's just chicoonery and Kapi, just those two mixed, depending on the strength of it, I should be out and not cognitive to be able to have a coherent conversation until about 5 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, okay.
Fuck.
Wow. It's 8 to 5.
Yeah.
It's like a nine hour gig.
Yeah. Because usually you're going to peak from about 12 to about 3 o'clock. And that's when you're peaking hard.
And so. You're disrupting sleeping patterns, obviously, here too, as well. So when you come out of it and you're done with it, let's 5 o'clock in the morning, what's that sensation like? What do you?
Well, DMT also is a psychotropic, so it's going to keep you up. Like you're not going to go back to sleep. Like you're not going to sleep. So usually for me, like the next day I get up and my ayahuasca master will leave the earth. He'll leave the area and then he'll go do his own thing. And then he'll let you just pretty much stay there as long as you want. Last time I went back to my room and then I cried for like maybe about like a good hour and a half to 2 hours. And then for me, then I have a journal and then I'll just start to process all the thoughts that I had of like key points that I don't want to forget or that I really feel like are something I need to actually do. So usually I try to do that. And then I'm up the rest of the day because you're just, I just can't sleep. Like there's so much to just, you know, just that's in my mind that I can't sleep.
It's almost like seeing something traumatic that it's like, I've seen a lot of traumatic things, like somebody get shot in the face, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, there's no way you can go. I remember when I first saw somebody getting shot in the face, dude, I couldn't sleep for like 2 days straight.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
just like, it was just playing over and over my head. You yeah. know what I mean? And it's like, man, dude, I can't believe I just watched that. Right? Is that similar?
Yeah. Because I mean, yeah. I mean, because you've had like your mind's been going for 8 hours of just thoughts, nonstop thoughts, and you can't control those thoughts. Those thoughts are what ayahuasca is doing to you. You're not what you're controlling. So now that I've control of my thoughts again, now I'm just replaying everything that was there, trying to figure out what the hell just happened. And a lot of times, I need that whole day to really just to reprocess it.
And then after you've done all that for that whole day, how are you feeling like afterwards, like the next day?
It just like depends on like the ceremony. Like I said, like that one sucked. That one sucked where I was bummed out about it, where I was like, okay, where I flew all the way out here, did all this work. And then now you're telling me to go back and start all over again. Like, I'm a fucking asshole.
Yeah. And so when
it's hard. I mean, there are times that are great. And of course I'm on cloud nine. I go out and fish for piranha. You know, I go explore the land. I'm happy in a good mood. And of course, at times it's bad and I just sit there in my bed and I just kind of have a good cry for a bit. I've learned to embrace a good cry.
Oh, yeah. It's cleansing, man. It's very cleansing.
I want to embrace that.
Yeah. Does your master, you call him ayahuasca
master? Yeah.
Yeah.
Master,
yeah. Ayahuasca master, right? Is there certain things, are you a master as well?
No. Years. He won't let me. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like when you have people, so you wouldn't walk somebody through an ayahuasca event yet.
Yeah, I do know. Yeah.
Okay.
I do hear. Yeah.
So how does that work?
Small scales. I do understand. So here I will only have 4 people at a time and I do them July, August, September, and October. Okay. I only do them during like the hot months.
Okay.
You know, and I do four people at a time once a month. Okay. Usually that list is like right now that list is already like 1 year out filled out.
Wow.
That list is already filled out.
Good so for
I,
you.
I don't have to worry about that list. I already have the 4 people for July already set up. In August, it's set up. September, October, they're all done.
Now,
already.
You have those people all lined up for the year.
Yeah.
And so what's the difference between a master and what you do?
Well, he won't show me like for me. So I'll go to Peru and I'll bring it all back and I'll have it sent to Brazil to Mexico, Mexico to here. So it's already made. It's already all made up.
Like, he'll make it himself.
He won't let me make it yet.
It's about mixing the drink.
Yeah, mixing the drink parts with the
skill. It has nothing to do with him overseeing.
Well, yeah, so funny. So the last time I was there, I had been behind his back. I've been trying to learn how to make like an ayahuasca tea, you know?
Okay.
So I brought back some Cappy, some chacruneri. I had it sent to Brazil, to my house. This guy dropped it off for me. And I've been trying to figure out how to microdose it. I want to really figure out that's a skill. I'm like, I want to figure out how to fucking do it. So behind his back, I've been trying for about a good year just to figure out how to microdose it, you know, because it's either all in or all out, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, there has to be an easier way. Like, what if I just want to have like a little bit of flavor, a little bit of taste, you know, a little bit of like an experience. And I can't figure it out at all. I've been trying it. So I go back to Peru on my last trip and this fucking guy has a goddamn ayahuasca tea thing for doing that exact thing. That, you know? I'm like, master, what's that? He's like, this is the microdose. I thought, well, that's what I've been trying to do. Like, no, it's just not time yet, buddy. Not time for you yet. So I took some, put it in my little pocket, and I brought some back to the States.
Yeah.
But he makes all of it, though. He makes all of that. And then I'll have it sent back here to the States. So
you, the categories, or I guess what you call titles of an ayahuasca.
I'm definitely an apprentice.
An apprentice.
Yes.
So it's like apprentice and a master, right?
Yes.
And it really has nothing to do with you overseeing the event. It has everything to do with the actual.
Well, I think also conquering. Like one thing I like about my master is that he's so comfortable being in that space. I'm still uncomfortable in that space.
What do you mean by that?
Like he, just the way he is around it, how he handles it, how he talks about it, when he drinks it, when he makes it. Like you can tell he has a certain, there's like a love there. There's like a real much of, there's like an affection. There's a love. There's a caring for it. There's like a relationship there that exists that I still see that I can't really wrap my head around yet.
Yeah.
So when he makes it, it's like love. It's like poetry when he makes it. The singings, the songs, dance, the preparation, how he cuts it, how he talks to the plant before he even cuts it down. All these things are 30, 40 years of just experience that he has.
Wow.
For me, I still very much stare at it like fear. There's still fear when I have respect for it. He just, for him, it's just part to him now, you know?
Yeah.
It's a part of him.
Yeah, almost. It's part of who he is. For me, I still with fear. I'm like, oh God, please don't let me go south today. Please don't let it go south. You know, for him, it's just, I'll see him drink it. There's nothing there, you know?
Yeah.
He's calm. He's just,
he doesn't have those fears of.
Yes. And I still fear the hell out of it.
Yeah.
Because I know I respect it. I know that it's powerful. It's scary, you know?
Right. Is there an event or like you said, set the intention, like Jeff asked you, like, hey, what is the intention? Like, what's the outcome? Do you interview these people before you
start? Oh, yeah. There's a huge screening. Yeah. So part of my preparation is that screening form there. So that's one thing that I had to get around. For one, our meds. Contraindications are a huge thing for me now. So I've had to read a lot of journals, a lot of what Lexapro does to you, half-life of meds, your physical fitness as well. All those play a part in that too now. So I have to fill out a huge form. It's probably 4 pages long, but also go, do you have support system? Like, are you in therapy? Have you ever had psychotic breakdowns? Have you ever done this? Have you ever done that? And when's the last time you went to the doctors there? How often do you have sex? Are you divorced? Do you have a relationship with like your kids? I'm trying to figure out as much as I can in those forms to figure out if they're safe or not to actually serve. Wow. This is not for everyone at all.
Got it.
It's not for everyone at all.
Yeah.
And so let's say they get through all your screening process and the preparation, right? They come to you. If let's say I'm going to speak it for myself and I'm coming to you and I give you my intention. Let's just say I'm dealing with a sexual addiction.
Yeah.
Is there something in that preparation process or if when you get somebody in your room to go, okay, here's my intention, this thing. Are there intentions that you're like, fuck that, I'm not touching it?
There was a guy and there was a man that I did turn down last year that was referred to me by a cardiologist. And he had, it's a MAP, minor attracted persons. MAP, minor attracted persons.
Oh, minors.
Yeah.
He was attracted to minors.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And that was, I couldn't wrap my head around that. That was one of those ones where I don't want to be around you. I'm sorry. I don't want to have those words said in here. I don't have that situation brought up. But he had MAPs. And I didn't actually know what that was when he first brought that to me. But the cardiologist referred him to me like, hey, I have a guy, he's a really good friend of mine. He has MAPs. And I was like, well, I'll go online and see what that is. And I couldn't find what MAPs was because it's not something that's really commonly used.
Yeah.
So when he finally went through the forums and he comes back to me and then he tells me that he's attracted to little kids, I was like, yeah, get the fuck out of here, dude. No, I just can't deal with that. I don't want, because usually a lot of what you're going to be dealing with will come out during that. You're going to, you're going to talk about it. You're going to, I don't want to hear you talking about your addiction to kids.
Yeah.
So
something like that.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, dude. Like, just to think about it from that perspective, it's that in depth. But I'm assuming you get a lot of people from the VA.
Oh, a lot. Yeah, a lot.
And
so
how many of them are dealing with?
I do a lot. Well, shrooms are one of the ones where if you're from the VA and you're on meds, shrooms are great because they forgive so much. Shrooms are so forgiving. And they're the intro.
What do you mean by forgiving?
Well, because most like if you're on, let's say you're on a strong DMT like ayahuasca there, you can't mix that with other meds.
Right.
So one thing I've had to really pay attention to or learn about are contraindications. I've had to really go and actually study a bunch of books on what Lexapro does, Zoloft, Adderall, and learn about the half-life, what you can and can't mix with that, how long it stays in the body for. That's just a whole other science unto itself. But mushrooms, what are so great about mushrooms is that they forgive a lot, which means they're able to mix with a lot of other meds.
Got it.
And so usually with vets, they're already on something. They're on something no matter what. But if the dose is a low enough dose and they're in shape and they have a washout period, then they can do shrooms. And I think that's where everyone should start with, the shrooms. The shrooms are amazing for your serotonin. They're amazing. And even a microdose does huge a lot.
Yeah. And so how much of those people at VAs are dealing with like PTSD?
A ton of them. Well, that's the problem that I had is that when I went to the VA and I told them I have all these problems, for them, their answer is pills. Pills.
Because they don't know anything else.
Yeah, they don't know anything else.
That's Western medicine.
Yeah, it's Western medicine, And so of course, like when I started doing this, I thought this is starting to help me out a lot. Like I'm seeing phenomenal changes in my personality, in my self-esteem, my self-respect, just how I'm kind of viewing the world. And I kind of feel like I'm getting this next chance, you know, to be real me again, you know? I was like, I want to offer this to everybody else. So I started talking to vets about it and I would fill up. So now I do paint and shroom groups now. At my house now.
Paint
and shroom parties that I do.
Explain this to me.
So what I do is I have
to do this.
So what I do is now, and it's on my site, and I offer every other week. I'll get maybe sometimes 5 people, 15 people, 20 people, but I'll have a bunch of easels and painting boards and I'll do shrooms and I'll let them paint. And they'll just paint whatever they see there. Like we'll have a bunch of pictures on like the wall.
Yeah.
And they could just paint and they could do shrooms, low dose shrooms, and they could just kind of get out their stress and frustrations right then and there. and they could paint and they could do shrooms.
For the audience, what is shrooms? What's the number one side effects? Like, what's the feeling that you feel?
Well, if you're microdosing, that's the thing, is that's the point of what microdosing is to where you have that serotonin change without the psychedelic trance. So if you're, so what shrooms are great was they're great for anxiety and depression. Two best reasons why everyone should do shrooms. Anxiety and depression, boom, they're natural for that right there. Depending on the strain and the dose, you can do maybe like 100 milligram dose of shrooms every day. Like for me, I do 100 milligram dose in my coffee every day. And immediately, boom, I'm happy, peppy, good to go. Without that psychedelic, like seeing trails and going off.
Yeah.
If you start doing heavier doses, like you're, let's say you're doing 2-3 grams, now you'll start to have the actual psychedelic experience. You'll start giggling, laughing, seeing colors, floor's gonna move, colors are gonna go that way, tiles are gonna do that, all of that. So if you're trying to really figure, okay, like I wanna be able to go about the day, I wanna be able to drive a car, take care of the kids, function around, then yeah, then one thing I think everyone should do is that.
Got it.
What's the, one of the things that I remember growing up and you're watching movies, they always, it was always the Indian tribes and you talk about peyote.
Peyote, mescaline. That's a mescaline.
So what's the difference? So is there, what's the difference between peyote and ayahuasca? Is there,
is it a cactus? Well, they're okay. A cactus. So you have two cactus plants. One of them is going to be peyote, which you're actually going to eat the root of it. Like, oh, sorry, you're going to eat the actual plant of like that. It's
but,
a plant.
But it gives you the same effects as ayahuasca,
yes,
right?
Yes. Well, yeah.
Kind of, sort of, yeah, not yeah. exactly, but.
Well, they're both psychedelics, yes.
Okay.
Yes. And then you have a San Pedro, which is the other cactus. So there are two cactuses there that do the same thing. They're both a mescaline base. Both of those are from tribes, yes.
That's always interesting. I remember growing up and they'd always, in movies, they, you know, it's
peyote. The Indians are smoking peyote.
Yeah, it's all peyote, right? Oh, yeah. And it's always in the teepees, like
It's strong too, yeah. It's strong.
Is peyote... is that here in the States?
You can get that here in the States.
That's easier to get.
It takes 25 years for it to fully mature.
Oh. Peyote?
Peyote, yeah.
The hell do they keep it in stock, bro?
That's the thing. Peyote in America is going extinct. Peyote in Peru is not going extinct. So the other one that grows faster, which is San Pedro, which is the other cactus, that one grows within like 1 to 2 years fully, and you can just take that one. But that one's now becoming more popular now.
Interesting.
But peyote takes 25 years for it to fully grow. So it's going extinct here now. But there are peyote farms that are starting up now where they're banned now, where you can't pull from those farms now.
It takes 25 years to
for the peyote to fully mature.
So that you can actually take it.
Yes.
You can't use peyote when it's immature.
Yeah, you can't, yeah.
Because you aren't going to get anything.
I remember way back in my drug days, that ayahuasca was illegal at some point.
It still is illegal in the States.
Yeah.
And it's one of those ones where it's such a gray area now. And even for me, as I kind of traverse this whole land now, it's one of those scary things where it's still a Schedule I. So it's still a Schedule I drug. But if you go on Google, Facebook, Instagram, there's retreats everywhere, all over the States. So you can pull up ayahuasca retreat in Wisconsin, Nevada, Idaho.
Isn't that fucking funny?
How that shit is.
It's the same thing as like marijuana.
Yeah.
Marijuana's good here, but not
there. We'll take a look at shrooms now. I just bought shrooms the other day at the Oceanside Night Market. I bought shrooms. That's crazy. It's still against the law, but now it's there now too.
Yeah.
So it's one of those ones there where I can't get it shipped here because a customs won't allow that
because
here.
It's illegal.
It's funny. When I first began this, before COVID, I just started this out and Bryce had just got about 10 kilos of ayahuasca shipped before COVID. After COVID, when everyone went to alternative health, boom, that became the main thing there. And now you can't get it shipped in the States at all.
Mm.
So for me, I have to have it shipped to Brazil, to Mexico, and then brought across for me here.
Wow.
And so it's a whole process where it gets every hand that will touch that, it gets more and more expensive.
Yeah,
because of
the cost.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man. It's like, it's wild, dude. I that's what I thought. It was like illegal. That's why they do it down at the Tecate. In Mexico, it's not illegal.
Well, the thing is, it is illegal, but it's also everywhere in the States. I mean, you can literally pull up an ad right now on freaking Facebook, pull up ayahuasca retreat, and you'll get 30 of them here in like this.
Yeah, it's going to pull up on my Instagram here in a second.
Yeah, I guarantee. Yeah, it'll pull up for
you. Both are listening, bro. They're going to think we're all like, let's fucking go, baby.
Look at all these ayahuasca.
So it's one of those ones where I'm always still a little bit scared. Well, I'm like, okay, any day the feds are going to come storm down the doors and go, we want to see all your ayahuasca, you know?
Yeah.
Or just not. But so far, it's been 4 years.
Right.
Yeah. It's fine. So.
Wow. So,
man.
Dude, that's wild, dude. I think Jeff and I want to do some microdosing.
Should.
Yeah. Right? Let's
do it, baby.
Yeah.
We'll plan a day where there's nothing on our fucking calendar, which is very rare.
Well, that's the goal. I mean, that's the goal is to do a microdose without the psychedelic experience there. So, yeah. so you're doing little bits of amounts.
Yeah.
You're not doing nowhere near enough to actually be like, oh my God, you see her.
No. Yeah.
No.
So you're in the dark.
Yeah, in the dark.
Just,
yeah.
Just podcasts in the dark.
Just podcasting in the dark.
That's what we should do. All right. You're here first. Jeff and I and Ricky are going to after our fucking ayahuasca or micro dose episode, baby.
Oh, God.
Come on, man. Come on.
That's scary.
No, you won't be able to talk.
Filler words would I put in?
Yeah, filler words, yeah.
Yeah. How do people, dude, there's so much to go on with this kind of thing, but you are 1 year out, you said, on your schedule?
Yeah, I'm 1 year out. Yeah, because I just do four at a time because I have to be able to control that space.
Right.
So I don't, and plus, I mean, also it's so profitable that I don't need to do more than what I'm doing now. Like stick to what's safe, stick to what I can control, and actually do the work, help the people do the work. I feel like since it helped me so much that I want to keep it smaller, that way I can actually help them if they need their own time and attention. I don't want it to be so big to where they fall through the cracks.
Yeah. And the price point for something like that.
Only $600. Yeah. $600 like a night. It's cheap.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I mean, most of the work I do with shrooms is only like $50-$60. I mean, the goal is I'm such a believer now in working on your health in your head. Your mental health is important.
Yeah.
And that's an area where I think for years I just kicked it to the rocks for so long, and now that it's become such a big part of everything that I do. I mean, everything I do now, pretty much every day, is based around that now.
Yeah.
From doing that work, from me journaling, jotting, doing everything I can to really fix those wrongs that I've done, but also make sure that I'm good here.
Yeah.
And that's why I love to actually give to them now too. Now it's become such a huge thing now.
Yeah, right. That's cool. Where can people find out more information about your company and scheduling stuff?
Oh, just go to my Instagram.
Which is?
Combo Healing Me.
Combo.
K-A-M-B-O, Healing Me. Yeah.
Okay.
And then, so they'll send you a DM.
Yeah.
Is there a schedule thing on the website?
No, usually I just talk to them first. Like, everyone has to get screened as to why you want to do it. Because, I mean, people will want to do it just because it's cool. Like you said, like stars do it, celebrities do it.
Yeah.
And that's not the kind of people that I actually want.
Right.
That's not what you want.
No, I want people like, hey, man, I have this issue going on. I'm trying to do this or that, and I want help. That's the kind of person that I want.
Trying to make an impact.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Sweet, man. Thanks for coming in, thank brother.
Yeah, man, awesome.
This was a good conversation.
This was great.
So you talk about a little psychedelics.
Yeah, let's get high, bro.
You got it. Let's do it.
Awesome. Bye-bye.
This has been an international podcast transmission of No Fixed Agenda presented by Bubs Naturals. Music was provided by The Poor Dirty Astronauts with lyrics written by Matt Meyer. You can rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you find your favorite podcast episodes. NFA, over and out.